All right, so we start our third hour. Let me tell you all about it. Welcome back, or good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. Nice to have you here. Coming up next segment, I've got a shortstop, good young shortstop for the St. Louis Cardinals, Paul DeJong. Later on this hour, Terry Francona, manager of the Indians. Always look forward to that. After the program today, we have episode 78. 78. I am really proud of that catalog. 78 eps of the Jim Rome podcast. It's once a week. It is free. It is exclusive content. Eddie Olczyk will join us, give us his updated thoughts on the NHL postseason. We're getting closer to the first Saturday in May, the Derby. We get into that. And, of course, with Edzo, we talk some life. So look for that. That's after the show. Program today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I'm going to talk about the Rockets in 1 minute, but some reaction to the bunny beatdown. Hey, Jim, I guess you could say every bunny was kung fu fighting. Signed, Carl Douglas. Like that one comment said, it'd be pretty embarrassing, pretty humiliating to get beat up by a bunny. Not only to get beaten up by a bunny, but to have that video go viral. Everybody saw it. Not only do you have the knowledge that you got the bleep kicked out of you by a bunny, but everybody in the country saw it. And we're still talking about it Tuesday after the fact. So great. And no credit to all those jackwagons who stood off to the side, who did not come to that woman's aid, but rather felt it was more important to get it on video. I only needed one of you jackwagons to get it, as long as one guy got it on video, and everybody else jumped in to help. You know what? Better that we didn't get it on video, and you all jumped in to help. But none of you did. You let the bunny do the dirty work for you. And the rest of you just sat back, did nothing, didn't want to get involved, and just kind of mocked the entire proceeding. At least there was one hero, the bunny, the hero we all needed and wanted. And who is this guy now? I need to see this guy without his bunny head on. I'm glad he stayed in character as long as he did. All right, so last night was supposed to be the night the Houston Rockets closed out the Utah Jazz so they could get ready for Golden State. Last night was supposed to be the time where the Rockets finished their light work in order to get to the heavy work, the real work. But that's not what happened, because Utah came out like the wounded animal they were, and they battled to stay alive. You know, the same way that the Pistons did against the Bucks. You do not want to get swept, and you definitely do not want to get swept at home. I mean, your pride's got to kick in. Your survival instinct's got to kick in. The Rockets were supposed to handle this the way the Milwaukee Bucks did when they closed out Detroit. Granted, Utah is a lot better than Detroit, but Houston was looking to shut this thing down and then shut it down. Get this series over with and then get some rest. And it seemed like that's exactly what was going to happen. What was going to happen when James Harden dropped Jay Crowder in the second quarter?
Coming up on 5 minutes to play in the first half. Foul on an offensive foul on Harden. Crowder felt he was pushed.
Did you see that? I'm not even sure how to put this. I guess if I had to put it one way, I'd put it like this. He put him in the ground. Man, Crowder was having one of the better games of his career, but he hit the deck like he needed a life alert button. And yes, if you're a Utah fan, you're looking for Harden to get called for a push-off. But Harden did not get whistled. Probably because he routinely puts people in the ground. Normally, you've seen a grown man like Crowder hit the deck like that with his hands up, and you're blowing the whistle out of shock more than anything else. It used to be that you would see that, and you'd be screaming, clean up on aisle three, clean up on aisle three, someone call someone, because there's a clean up on aisle three as a man is down. Except Harden does that with such regularity, it's like, yeah, well, that'll happen. Happens all the time. Houston was down 9 at that point in the second quarter. They get closer before the end of the half, and then they rip off a 10-2 run. They start the third. They take the lead. And at that point, it seemed like, well, it's over. Utah's pride and dignity were, for the most part, still intact, but they were totally outclassed. Not totally trashed.
Totally trashed.
Just totally outclassed. They just weren't good enough, is what I'm saying. Houston was going to move on and get the rest they needed. But then Donovan Mitchell took over. The guy who had taken heat for how he had played in the series thus far gets off. 19 of 31 in the fourth quarter, including this monster moment.
Everyone standing, picked up, stolen. O'Neal, lob, Donovan!
That dunk didn't just bring down the house. It snapped all the brooms because there would be no sweep. Now we're going back to Houston for game five. Nothing but respect for Utah. It would have been so much easier just to lay down, find a soft place, lie down, die. Do what a lot of teams would have done in that position. Fight for three quarters, then pack it in. Fold. To realize that losing last night means they don't have to pack their bags and fly to Houston. Now they can just go right home and sleep in their own beds. Most would have done that, but not the Jazz. They extend the series. And now they're talking like they've got big plans. Big plans to cause some big problems. Now that's not to say Houston's in trouble. I'm not going to say that because I don't think they are. Nor am I going to point out that Houston looked really tired in that fourth quarter when they were outscored 31-12. Nor am I going to say that old Chris Paul appeared to be getting really frustrated and was barely moving on defense late in the game and was spending a lot of time bent at the waist, tugging on his own shorts. What I am going to say is this. Houston's going to have to expend energy that they want to save. They'll win the series. We know this. Hell, the Jazz know that. No team with James Harden in his prime, and even a Chris Paul bent over and breathing heavily in the fourth quarter, is going to blow a 3-0 lead. It's not about this series. It's about the next series. And a huge issue for Houston in previous playoff runs has been the fact that their key guys do wear down, and they do break down. But this year, it felt different. And it felt different because they were going to get Golden State in the second round, which is a good thing. Not for anybody else, but for Houston, because they'd be fresher. And Golden State had already lost a game in the first round, a game that they had a huge lead in. So, the Warriors had to work a little harder. Houston was on pace for a sweep. It was all coming up rockets until last night. They blew it last night. They did not choke Utah out when they had the chance, because it looked like they were going to. And then it looked like they were wearing down in the fourth quarter. So now they've got to play that extra game, get even less rest. And while it might not hurt them in this series, it might hurt them in the next series. Bottom line, Houston is the one team that can legitimately say, the sooner we get a crack at the Warriors, the better. But they just made it even tougher on themselves. Should have choked them out when they had the chance, because the last thing you want to do is let Utah stick around any longer, give them any reason to believe, and then take any more additional punishment yourself before you get in with the real fight. They won't regret that in this series, but they might regret it in the next. 1-800-636-8686. All right, am I going to do all the heavy lifting? Anybody want to come in here? Anybody not named Bob from Calgary? We're turning away bad calls, but I'll give you a quick yes and a green light to a good call. 1-800-636-8686. Still getting reaction to the bunny beatdown. Romy, just watch the bunny fight. Damn, that dude got absolutely smoked by bunny guy. Kudos to Peter Cottontail and the officer who just let things stand. Dave in SoCal, war Easter bunny suit guy. Again, I'm not a proponent of violence. But sometimes that street vigilante in the bunny costume has got to handle his business. Jaime, the best part of the video is the bunny shadow boxing after stomping Florida guy. Stephen S.A., it's actually true. The bunny did style it afterwards. Like I said, it could have been worse. I mean, he got up on this guy and was hammering him, putting his punches together, mixing up his combinations beautifully. The idiot in the street was incapable of defending himself. And of course, what's the biggest fear anyway? The biggest fear, anybody knows that when you're in the street, there are no rules. Anything is fair game. This is why you never want to get into a fight in the street. What's the biggest fear? Everybody knows this. The biggest fear in a street fight, aside from somebody having a gun, is the fight goes to the ground. The fight goes to the street. That fight went to the street. That dude's lucky that bunny did not get up on him and start stomping his melon. Snaglio Ordonez tweets, while you're on the subject of bunny rabbits, did I mention what I had for dinner last night? Did it up nice. Did it up nice and medium well over the trash can fire. Got it so right, I could barely taste the tire marks. Yours, Ira. FBI Mike in Toledo. Wore the return of Lauren in Naples and Pup in G-Rap. Yeah, Ira letting us know that he was homeless was not one of the better developments on this show. Now I've got people like FBI Mike in Toledo talking about how Ira is eating a rabbit that he scraped off the street because he lives on the street. It's just kind of foul, man. Not cool. Luckily, we are going to continue with the interview portion of this show. Paul DeJong, very good shortstop for the St. Louis Cardinals, joins me next segment. After that, Terry Francona, Indians manager. NFL draft is coming up on Thursday. Looked like Patrick Peterson might be on the move, and then he wasn't. I'll try and get that to you, too. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Don't forget about that podcast. Episode 78, Eddie Olczyk. We're going to push that out not long after the show. Look for that. Stay tuned. We'll come right back. Paul DeJong joins me next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You know, Twitter can be really very easy. Like this. This is very simple and it works. At Bry Sud tweets, hey Rome, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Sincerely, the Easter Bunny. That's good. It's clean. That's tight. It's a good tweet. I am very happy to read that tweet. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts. Better prices every day. We are efforting Paul DeJong. Hopefully I find him soon because Terry Francona will be joining us next segment. That actually is an opportunity for you. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-636-8686. Let's see. Hawk, how do you feel about that call right there? Pick up your headphones real quick. That was not a strong endorsement. I said, how do you feel about that call? And you said, I feel okay about it. Let's go ahead and decode that. What is I feel okay about it?
Well, I emphatically said, I feel okay about it, which means if it goes good, I'll take all the credit for finding a great new caller. And if it goes bad, then I'm going to say I kind of had a feeling it was going to go that way.
I thought you just said emphatically, I feel okay about it.
I emphatically feel okay. Like I was like, yes, I feel okay about it, meaning I feel very okay about feeling okay about it.
Yeah, like emphatic would suggest that you feel strongly, not okay. Like you feel strongly okay, like you feel
That's
really
it.
Okay.
I feel strongly.
I feel extremely okay about it.
Yes, I feel strongly about feeling okay about it.
I feel like I get dumber every time I talk to you. I feel extremely okay about it. What does that mean? Is it a good call or a bad call? You screened it.
It's a fine call.
Say it again.
It is a fine call.
A fine call.
A fine call.
Define fine.
It might be okay. It might be bad. It might be great. It's a wild card phone call.
That's fine. That's
It's not going to be Toby, but then again, it's not going to be Dr. Dave. It's not going to change the course of the jungle. I can guarantee that.
Like I said, you're making me dumber. That doesn't help me at all. I just want to know, you screen the phone call. Should I take it or not?
Yes, I guess now, yes. There's a lot of hype behind this.
I guess. Dude, I've never seen so much hedging and backpedaling in my life. Yes, you should maybe take that call.
Let's do it. I'm all about it now.
Okay, go away. You know what? Absolutely, positively, you should maybe think about taking that call. Man, I need somebody not to be so paranoid. Just take a stand. Yes or no? Niz, let's find out. After all that, Niz, there's a lot riding on your call, Niz. Let's go to Los Angeles. In the meantime, we are efforting Cardinals shortstop Paul DeJong. In the meantime, we go to L.A. Niz. Niz, how are you?
I'm doing good, bro. What's up, baby?
What's up?
How's it going?
Good, dude. You?
Everything's good, man. I'm just laying here watching you.
Right on. I'm just sitting here talking to you. What do you want to talk about?
Man, I just want to talk about, like, sports in general, right? And like, just the fact that people just think that they should not close out series. Like, sometimes I feel like it's staged, like, just to keep going, just to, like, make the fans come out and spend more money.
Like it's fixed.
Yeah, because it's like the talent that Houston has over the Jazz, it should have been a clean sweep. So now they have a whole another day of endorsements, like everything going on. Like I'm starting to feel like everything's just like planned.
I feel you. All right, let me respond to that, bro. Have a good day. He's like, yo, man, I just feel like everything's planned. Like, you know, you extend that series another day, more tickets, more advertising. Anyway, yeah, you had that right, Hawk. As promised, we are joined right now by a shortstop for the St. Louis Cardinals. A couple of hits, a run, a double, and last night's win over Milwaukee. On the season, he is hitting .330, four home runs, 20 runs, 11 runs batted in. Top 10 in the NL in runs and batting average. He was a fourth-round pick out of Illinois State back in 2015. St. Louis is tied for first in the NL Central. They're at home tonight against Milwaukee. Paul DeJong is my guest. Paul, it's really nice to have you on. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So you're coming off that 13-5 win last night. Matt Carpenter had a couple of hits. Paul Goldschmidt had three. You had two. Jose Martinez had two. Dexter Fowler had four. Fowler was saying afterwards that it's contagious. So how good does it feel when everybody's getting up and making an impact literally every time they pick up the bat?
Yeah, that seventh inning was pretty big for us. I got up twice in the inning. You know, that's always a good sign, but I think our offense is starting to click a little bit. We're not relying on the home run. We're beating teams multiple ways, you know, passing the baton, good base running, walks, and taking that extra base.
Listen, I know you're not looking to make it about you, but your teammates will do so. For instance, catcher Yadier Molina said of you, quote, "This kid can do it all. He can pick it. He can swing it. He can run the bases. I'm just happy for the great start that he's had," end quote. I mean, I don't need to tell you, but that is extremely high praise from one of the best to ever play the position. What's it mean to you to know that you've earned that kind of respect from a teammate like that?
It's just it's an honor to be able to play with him. You know, playing shortstop, I get to see him, his every move, and I've learned so much from Yadi. He's a, you know, living legend in this city, and just saw him get his ninth gold glove last night on the field. So truly inspiring. Makes me want to play even better to get up to that level.
Paul DeJong is joining us. Now, I think a lot of people know this, but some don't. You were a biochemistry major in college. So when it comes to hitting, how much of it is an art and how much of it is science? As an example, are you digging really deep on spin rates and launch angles, or do you take a different approach?
Well, I dive into the analytics when it comes to preparing for the starting pitcher. Just kind of maybe just paint a picture in my mind of what his fastball looks like, or you know, if his fastball has a high spin rate, that means it's going to look like it kind of a little rises a little bit, and he might be a little quicker to the plate than you might think. So for me, it just kind of paints a picture of what this guy's ball's shape is going to look like, the slider, the fastball, whatever else he's got. And then I go up there and just use my eyes.
All right, so you've also done some work with Dr. Lawrence Rocks on how the elasticity of a baseball changes with air temperature. And you've also spent some time on how tendon chemistry can help athletes avoid injury. What were the conclusions regarding the impact of air temperature on a baseball?
Oh, we found that at medium temperatures, the ball would be most elastic, because at low temperatures, the less energy, the ball wouldn't bounce as much. And at super high temperatures, it gets kind of mushy and doesn't bounce as much either. But that's just kind of a result thing. I was more interested in the tendons and how I can train my body to be more prepared and also to, you know, realize that strength training isn't everything when it comes to baseball. It's more about, you know, power and using your natural ability.
We're talking to Paul DeJong. Now, you were a fourth-round pick out of Illinois State, as I mentioned. You were never ranked as a top 10 prospect by Baseball America, but at the same time, you moved right through the minors. What was your journey like through the minor leagues for you?
Well, the Cardinals gave me plenty of opportunities. They moved me up fast, and this is an organization that, you know, if you play well, they're going to move you up, and they challenged me. And, you know, I felt like I was always just trying to be the best player on that team and, you know, keep moving up the levels and keep that same mentality. And, you know, I think that's something that never stops. And, you know, I had great support all the way up with the coaching staff and the other players around me and helped me get better. So, you know, never felt overmatched, just felt like on to the next one.
Now, when you were called up, you homered in your first major league at bat. What do you remember about that moment and that at bat?
Well, I didn't get there until about the fifth inning, thanks to a flight delay out of Memphis that morning. But, you know, I just remember being super calm and waiting for my opportunity and, you know, got on deck in the eighth and didn't get up. So I let off the ninth, 1-0 fastball right where I wanted it and, you know, put a good swing on it. And that nice Colorado air kind of drifted it out.
Paul DeJong joining us. You know, when Paul Goldschmidt arrived from Arizona, your manager, Mike Schilt, had said that he felt like the team had six potential gold glove fielders, which means he was including you as one of the six. Now, as a reminder, you hit 44 home runs in your first two seasons. So if you've got that kind of bat as a shortstop, you could probably, I guess I could argue, be an average defensive player, and you're going to have a job for a decade. So why is it so important to you to keep doing the small things to make sure that you are fighting for a gold glove?
Just because I want to be that complete player. I want to be able to run the bases. I want to be able to make elite plays. I want to be able to hit home runs and drive guys in. So, to me, you know, there's a laundry list of awards that, you know, I'm gunning for, like the Silver Slugger, Gold Glove, All-Star, World Series, all those types of accolades are what I'm, you know, striving for. So, you know, it's all part of being a good baseball player, and shortstop's an important position, so I know about making plays for my pitchers is a huge thing for us.
And then, of course, a lot of it's about preparation and routine. You recently did an interview with the Positive Coaching Alliance where you talked about your preparation and your daily routine, and it's a routine that covers stretching, skill work, and mental preparation. Like, how long is that routine, and how valuable is it for you in getting ready to play?
Yeah, it can be mundane and tedious at times, but you got to learn how to kind of leave your phone in your locker and go and do your work. So, you know, it's something I've been working on since I got into professional baseball in 2015, just how to take care of myself every day to be able to go out there and play at my best. But, you know, it starts when I get there with, you know, doing my my stretching and my, like, corrective exercises, and then taking care of my arm, and then getting on the field, doing my hitting, doing my ground balls, and checking in on the pitcher for the day, and then, you know, just kind of some relaxation time in there too, just kind of unwind and get ready for the game.
Hey, Paul, really quickly, what you mentioned about sometimes you got to put the phone down and just do the work. It's such a fascinating concept, because I've got a couple of kids, a couple of teenagers, and we always have that conversation, but it's not just teenagers, right? I mean, even Cliff Kingsbury, mm-hmm. the Cardinals, said, we're trying to shorten our meetings so guys can get back and check their phones because we know they will. Is that an issue even at, like, the major league level? Do guys have trouble putting their phones down?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a societal problem, you know, just kind of that addiction or, you know, that need for information. So, you know, for me, I catch myself at times just wanting to, you know, leave it in my locker and go and just kind of enjoy the moment. So I think there's definitely, you know, some room for free will in there to kind of say, hey, I'm gonna leave this here and go focus on something else for now, and it'll be there when I get back.
All right, so it doesn't mean necessarily, though, that it's all work all the time. You
right.
did some ice fishing, and from the looks of the photos on your Instagram, it was pretty successful. What were the highlights, and what's it take to be a great fisherman?
Well, it's nice to have some local buddies and family up in northern Wisconsin and kind of show you which lakes to go on, but take some patience and you know, also some finesse to pull a fish in like that. You got to, like, give and take. You can't just start pulling it up like a bat out of hell. You got to, you know, let it run and pull it in and let it run back and tire it out and pull it through that hole.
Hey, Paul, I don't really know my Wisconsin geography that well, but I'm learning. Like last summer, I went to Eagle River. I'm going to go back there again, I think, this summer.
You're very close.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. How close am I to where you were?
About 30 minutes.
Oh, nice. Nice. So where I am, there's probably some good ice fishing, right?
Absolutely, yeah, and great summer fishing, too. So all times of the year.
All right, so what's your advice for somebody who just, like, I'm a city guy. I'm a Los Angeles guy. Man, I have no clue. Like, I did some fly fishing in Montana. It seemed like a great idea. It went really badly for me. Any advice for me?
Yeah, you want to get yourself an electric auger. That's the new ion auger. It's the newest technology, no gas. Get yourself some tip-ups, and I would use live bait on a treble hook, and it's just that simple.
How about beer? Do I need any beer? Would that help?
You might need beer or maybe a fifth of Fireball to warm you up out there.
Okay.
If it's a little cold.
I like it. Hey, listen, you don't mind if I hit you up, right? If I get out there, I'm kind of lost and struggling, maybe I can hit you up for some more advice?
Anytime. Early January, I'll be up there.
Okay, man. I'll look for you. My man, Paul DeJong, St. Louis Cardinals shortstop, having a really good start to the year, and they're in first. Paul, really nice to have you on. I appreciate you, and thank you for the conversation.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate being on.
Great talking to you. Really well done. Really well done. All right, so I got me a little guide, an ice fishing guide. Auger talk. How you like me now, Wisconsin? I'm not that far from him, apparently. He said, I love the way he jumped in. You're only about 30 minutes from where we were. Auger talk. We are going back to Wisconsin. When we come back, Terry Francona, Indians manager, joins us. Eddie Olczyk, Jim Rome Podcast, F78, coming up later on. Stay tuned. First things first, a bottom of the hour sports update. Here is the very latest. I'm Jim Rome. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, really good day today. Our thanks to St. Louis Cardinals shortstop Paul DeJong, really good young player. They're playing good ball right now. But as promised, we are joined by the manager of the Cleveland Indians. He has led teams to 3 pennants and 2 World Series titles. He is a 2-time American League Manager of the Year. Led Cleveland to 3 straight divisional titles. Cleveland is currently in 2nd in the AL Central, and they are hosting Miami tonight, 6:10 p.m. Eastern. Terry Francona is our guest. Terry, it is awesome to have you back. How are you?
Jim, thanks for having me back. I always look forward to it. How are you?
Me too, my man. Terry, I'm great. You turned 60 yesterday. Happy birthday. How was that?
You know what? Thank you. I guess my first thought is a lot of people in Vegas probably lost some money. betting on the over, they probably lost.
Great.
But I mean, my body feels 80, but my head feels like I'm about 24, so I'm okay.
Good. I want to get back to that big day in a minute, but first, why don't we talk a little bit of baseball? You dropped a tough one to Atlanta on Sunday, but the game was marked by the return of Francisco Lindor. He homered in his second game back. How has he looked to you so far, and how good is it to have him back?
Well, first, it's great to have him back. You know, we were told by the doctors that, you know, there's going to be a little bit of I don't want to say a limp, but you're going to be able to tell in his gait that he's not 100%. And we can tell. Like, he went to his left on a ball up the middle, and you can see it a little bit, and that's going to probably be with him for a while. I think he knows it, and we know it, and we're going to try tomorrow. We got a day game, so we're going to DH him tomorrow. We're not going to play him 10 in a row. We want to let him – I mean, we want to let his body kind of get used to the banging around of playing every day. But it's great to have him back, even just his personality.
Terry Francona joining us. Now, it is early, and obviously it's the start of the season. It's been a little bit tricky because of the injuries, but 21 games in, Terry, do you have a sense or starting to get a sense as to the identity of this year's squad?
You know what, Jim? We're kind of a work in progress. You know, this is the first time since I've been in Cleveland, or it's the most turnover we've had. And that can never be used as an excuse, because once the game starts, I mean, you got to win. But we're you know, we've had some injuries. We've had to kind of mix and match. We're still trying to find our identity, you know, who we are. The guys do a really good job of trying to cooperate, which I appreciate. You know, if you're with the bullpen, whenever you ask them to pitch, they pitch, things like that. We don't do a lot of babysitting, which I appreciate. But as a team, I think we're still a work in progress.
Terry Francona is my guest. It makes sense. There's a lot of baseball left. Now, you signed a two-year extension with the team earlier this month. What does that deal mean to you, and what has your team in time in Cleveland been like so far?
You know, it's kind of unique, I think, where when you go to some place and you envision it being really good, and then when something actually doesn't just live up to it but goes past that, I think that's pretty rare. Again, what I'm saying is I value the people I work with so much here that I don't want to go anywhere else. And I know I'm not going to manage forever, and you know, and I don't plan on it, but I would like to stay here as long as I am managing, just because I care about the people so much.
Yeah, awesome. When you talk about the guys that you work with, the people you work with, I mean, there's not time to mention everybody, but you were very quick to give credit to team president Chris Antonetti and GM Mike Chernoff. What is it about the relationship that you have with both of them that makes it so unique and special?
You know, I knew Chris first. And then, you know, through – and Mark Shapiro also. And then through those guys, you start to meet, like, Mike Chernoff and, you know, Eric Bender. Guys, you meet all – you know, you get to know them all. The trust factor is so big that – and Chris and Cherney allow me to be myself. And by that, because I can be – I can say some dumb things. And they let me get to the point. They know that I'm going to come around a day or so later, and I'll shake my head and go, why didn't you say something to me when I said that? And Chris just laughs. I think they've made me better. I think I get too much credit here sometimes. I know I'd try to run through a wall for those guys, and I don't think they get the credit that they deserve.
We're talking to Terry Francona. Now, in honor of your birthday, Terry, the Athletic put together a piece that essentially was a roast of you. There are so many good stories. I don't have time to get into all of them, or very many of them. A number of the stories, though, are about your love of popsicles. You and I have talked about this, but for the record, what is your favorite kind of popsicle, and what is the most you have ever put away in a single sitting?
Yeah, I spent the night here at the ballpark one night because we had a real late night and it was a bad loss. It was 16 or 17. The problem was I threw a couple of the sticks away early, not realizing it was going to be one of those nights, so it actually might have been more. But I really like the grape ones. As you saw, I kind of have an affinity for Milk Duds. You know, that's why I'm the picture of health. And it happens to be, you know, at midnight. Remember the movie Stripes?
Sure.
Julie Oxberger, he said he swallowed aggression along with a lot of pizzas.
Right.
That's kind of me after losses.
I like it. Terry Francona, my guest. Now, the thing is, with a roast, of course, Terry, it's kind of hard to tell what's real and what's been exaggerated. For example, Antonetti says, quote, he woke up one day with all these marks over his stomach. He was concerned, like, do I have a skin disorder? What's going on? And then he looked over on the side of the bed and realized he had rolled over onto a plate of nachos, and the nacho parts were in his stomach. And Terry, that didn't really happen, right?
No, unfortunately, none of that is exaggerated. A couple of my kids were in town for my birthday, and my oldest daughter, she was laughing because she had visited me in Philadelphia on a road trip, maybe 10 years ago. So I rolled over in the morning, and she said I had an M&M stuck on my right nipple. It happens. And it unfortunately, like I said, it's not exaggerated.
It happens. It'll happen. Terry Francona is my guest. And Terry, you and I have talked about your relationship with your father in the past and the huge impact that he had on you. There is a famous photo of you and your dad with the team from back when you were 4 and a half, maybe 5 years old. The photo is up in a couple of spots at the stadium. So when you look out of your office, that's the first thing you see. What's that like for you?
It's one of the most touching things. You know, when I came here, the office was empty, obviously, because, you know, the old manager's gone. And when I showed up opening day, they had put 6 or 7 pictures up of my dad, even my mom. But now, looking out my door, I'm looking at it right now, it was Father Sunday. I was 4 years old. My dad standing behind me laughing with a big smile on his face. And they have it up in the hallway outside too, and it might be my favorite picture. And it just it makes, I mean, I see it every day. I see it when I'm looking at it right now. The one thing I think about is, God, I was a cute kid. What happened to me? But it also makes me think how fortunate I was to have parents that were as loving and respectful as they were.
Isn't that cool? Terry Francona, my guest. Terry, it's hard to imagine, and as we get older, and man, it's amazing where the time goes, but it's been 25 years since Michael Jordan was playing baseball for you in Birmingham. I know you've been asked about that, but when you look back on that time, what do you remember the most?
That it was the best learning experience of my life. You know, and by that, you know, I mean, when you're in Double A, you're just happy that the games are on radio. And then all of a sudden, Michael comes into your life, and you know, you're dealing with media. You're learning to be organized, get your time organized. You're dealing with arguably the most prolific, you know, athlete in the world. It was just great preparation for the major leagues. I didn't know it at the time. I was just trying to survive. But when I look back, it was the greatest learning experience I could have ever had.
You know, what do you think from Mike's standpoint, Terry? Like, if you put baseball aside for a minute, how much do you think that Mike appreciated things like learning how to play Yahtzee from you, or the bus trips, or the chance to just be one of the fellas for the first time in a long time? And do you think that he found himself again?
Yes, I actually do. And he mentioned to me one time, he was going to a basketball game. It was a Sunday morning, and he knew we had a day game. And he called me and he said, he goes, I enjoy basketball more now from being around baseball for a year. He goes, you guys love what you do. And he did it. You know, there were all these rumors and everything. He did it for the right reasons, and I got to see him live it out. And I also got to see him with his guard down. You know, when you're on a bus for 15 hours, nobody can get at you. And once he trusted you, he let his guard down. He enjoyed being able to be a normal person, even for just a little while.
Yeah, and then finally, Terry, because baseball is a game of failure, and it's so humbling, it's the most humbling thing in the world. How did Mike deal with failure when there's that much of it in baseball? What was that like for him?
You know, there were a couple conversations when I thought he was being a little too tough on himself, and I had kind of reminded him. I remember one day in Memphis, I said, Michael, I said, you're doing this for the right reason. I said, don't kill yourself. Don't beat yourself up. I said, it's a hard game. I said, you've earned the right to enjoy whatever success you have, you know, or whatever work you're putting in, or whatever challenges you have. Don't beat yourself up so much. And I thought Mike Barnett, who, you know, worked with him hitting all the time, really did a good job of reminding him why he was there and to enjoy every challenge.
He has led teams to 3 pennants, 2 World Series titles, a 2-time American League Manager of the Year. The Indians have won 3 straight division titles under his guidance. They're at home against Miami tonight. Terry Francona, my guest. And that's how you end a show. Terry, it is so good to have you back. Happy birthday. You know, I appreciate this relationship and the conversation all the time. Thank you very
much. Jim, thanks so much for having me. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
You got it, Skip. Thank you, Terry. He's the absolute best. Terry Francona, jungle favorite. Do you not have time to wax your car? If not, that's all right. New 303, touchless sealant, will save you hours. It takes only minutes to apply. You simply spray on and then you rinse off, and it protects up to 2 times longer than traditional waxes. More protection and shine with less effort and time. It is available at O'Reilly Auto Parts. My thanks to Terry Francona, Indians manager, Paul DeYoung, great young shortstop with the Cards, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, another draft prospect right ahead of the NFL draft. And that is the Tuesday edition. Don't forget, episode 78 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Eddie Olczyk is going to drop shortly after the program. Look for that. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're done.